Have you ever heard of the Camino de Santiago? I had not heard about this until a friend of mine, Andrew, went on a hike or a walk. I'm not really sure exactly where it would classify, but it's like almost 500 miles. And it's sort of like historically a religious pilgrimage. I don't know that he's necessarily that religious, but the walk seems pretty incredible, and his story is pretty interesting too, from learning how to sort of deal with his inner thoughts to bed bugs and all that. So let's take a listen to this episode where I go through it all with Andrew, and let's see what we can learn from it. Let's get after it.
Welcome to the Warrior Mindset Podcast. We're your guide as you make your way through life, getting better 1% every day. We believe that life is lived and true victory won through adversity. Nothing easy is ever worth it. We believe in the warrior ethos and support those that choose to walk that path.
Andrew, my friend, how's it going?
It's going great, man. Good to see you.
Yeah, how long has it been? It's been a while, like, gosh, 2021 or something like that.
It's crazy.
We got in a workout in the middle of a hurricane. And you know, I got in trouble for that because I let you guys in and we told everyone else to stay home that day. And I let you guys in. You were up here because it was flooding in Charleston.
Yep.
And I let you guys in and I made did something stupid and I took a picture.
Yeah. I've still got that picture on my phone, I think.
And everybody was like, why can't I come to the gym? I made a mistake. That was my first lesson.
It's like you, me, Moultrie, Heather, and then some one of your gym members always like,
that was fun, man.
Yeah, that was fun. Super cool.
Was you still working out?
So I moved to Detroit in 2021. In June of 2021, met a girl, followed her up here to Detroit. With her permission.
It's important to point that out.
She was on board with the plan. When I got up here, I'd been doing CrossFit for a few years and was just getting a little tired of it, was just looking for something new. And so I'd always been kind of curious about rock climbing. I'd done a little bit here and there with a couple of friends, and there were a couple of gyms here in Detroit. And I'd been really craving doing some backpacking and camping and stuff. And so I decided to give climbing a try and just got hooked. And so I've been rock climbing in as my like primary force of
that's awesome
form of working out for like the last that was 2022. So or 2021. So coming up on 3 years now.
Wow. What kind of climbing are you doing?
Little bit of a mix of everything. Okay. So the gym that I climb at, which has become also like where all of my friends are, because my friends in Detroit are people I met at the climbing gym. It's a great hack for making friends as an adult, by the way.
Makes sense.
Yeah, you do something a little bit dangerous together and you form bonds quickly. Yep. So I do a little bit of bouldering and then a little bit of top rope and lead climbing. And then have gotten outdoors a couple of times. Would love to get outdoors some more.
There's not many mountains in Detroit though.
No, we are not famous. Yeah, I picked a weird city to get to, to get into rock climbing in.
We
drive like 7.5 hours down to Kentucky to go climbing in the red. Usually.
I've done a little bit. I'm nowhere near even in the knowledge about like what to do, but I've done enough to I've scared the shit out of myself. So, yeah.
Oh, I scare the shit out of myself still every time I get on the wall.
Bouldering is not fun. Well, I asked that because I saw your post on LinkedIn about you hiking across Spain.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure I pronounce it right. Camino de Santiago.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
and right. I had heard of that once before, but only like, you know, the recesses of my mind did it register what you were doing. And so it made me look it up a little bit more and learn it, but tell me about that. How did you like pick that?
So what's crazy is like, I say this is a lifelong dream and people say that shit all the time. it genuinely is, or as close as you can get.
Okay.
I first learned about the Camino de Santiago in like a middle school Spanish class. I was in seventh grade. I had a teacher who was from Spain.
Oh.
And she assigned us all different regions of the country. And I just drew out of a hat Galicia, which is the northwest corner of Spain.
Okay.
And I think the capital of Galicia is Santiago de Compostela, which is where the Camino finishes, where all of the Camino routes, all of the
Camino de
Santiago routes, there's a bunch of different routes finish at the Cathedral of Santiago de Compostela, which in the legend is that that's where the bones of St. James the Apostle ended up.
Yeah.
And that's why the cathedral's there. That's why the city is there. And that's why this pilgrimage has cropped up that,
right, because it's partially religious, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the legend, I mean, all that
it's
stuff.
It's religious in origin, for sure. Right. So the origin is, it's a pilgrimage. It was, you know, walked by people who wanted to get, I guess, closer to God, or closer to, you know, wanted to do something hard and to sort of prove their faith, something like that. These days, it's a lot less religious. I didn't hike it for religious reasons. I'm not a particularly religious person, grew up somewhat religious, but these days I don't practice anything. I would say I was actually kind of surprised how few people on the trail were religious. Like, I would guess maybe 30% of the people I met. Definitely felt like the minority, which could have just been the group I was sort of self-selecting into. But that was the impression I got.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of work. I mean, how far is it completely?
So
whatever you hiked, because it's a long way.
Yeah, so I did the Camino Francés, which is the, I believe, the original route and the most famous, most popular route. And so the Camino Francés, if you do the traditional version, you start in the mountains of France, in the French Pyrenees, in a small town called Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port. My French accent is horrible. And then you walk basically across northern Spain and end in Santiago de Compostela. And so I believe that that section, that part is something like 480 or 490 miles, like 700-800 kilometers, something like that. And then there's another section from Santiago to the coast that a lot of people will do. And I got a day into that with my sister and my girlfriend. And then we decided to bail and decided we'd had enough. So
you'd had enough.
Yeah, we ended up walking. I walked about 490 miles, somewhere around there, give or take.
That's a long way, man.
It was. I was on trail for like 42 days, I think.
42 days.
Yeah. And that includes rest days. I took, you know, I had a couple of friends who refused to take a rest day. They never wanted to walk less than 15 miles or something. And that wasn't me. I wanted to experience the country and meet people and see things as I went. Yeah. And so I took, you know, probably 5 or 6 rest days along the way.
That is a serious sabbatical, my friend.
It was really cool.
How much of that was sleeping outdoors versus sleeping indoors?
I didn't sleep outdoors at all.
Okay.
I
saw your kit. I'll put a picture of the kit up.
Yeah.
I saw your kit, your daily, whatever you were carrying and stuff. And I didn't see any camping materials, but.
Yeah. The Camino is different from a lot of the hikes we have here in the States, you know, the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, in that it's really, you're walking from town to town. So in a given day, you might pass through 4 or 5 towns. And there's a ton of infrastructure. So there are hostels, or the term for like pilgrim hostels, pilgrim specific hostels, is albergues.
Okay.
To stay in an albergue, you have to have like a pilgrim's passport, which is something you just get for free when you start the Camino. Anyone can get one. The intention is really to stay in albergues. They really kind of discourage camping because you have so many people walking it and it's not really set up for it.
Right.
I had some friends who did some wild cowboy camping. a couple of nights, but it never worked out for me to join them. So I let them have that fun, and I just stayed stuck to the albergues.
That's funny, man. Well, tell me about it. Tell me from how did it start? I mean, what'd you do?
Yeah. So I flew in to Barcelona. I had a friend who has lived there for several years. So flew into Barcelona, got to hang out with him and his girlfriend for a day or two. And then took a train from Barcelona up to Pamplona, which was like the biggest city, closest big city to Saint John.
Okay.
And one of the first things that was just incredible that happened to me, you know, I had most of the Camino, I didn't book anything. I just would walk town to town, and then, you know, figure out where I wanted to stop that night, find a place to stay. A lot of the albergues are first come, first served, don't even accept reservations. But a friend, one of my dad's best friends, has walked the Camino several times, actually. And he had told me, hey, those first couple nights, you want to make sure you have something booked. Everything fills up. So I booked the first couple nights before I booked my train, and then realized, oh, crap, the train gets in after the buses leave. So I got to get a taxi, an expensive taxi to drive me an hour and a half through the mountains to St. John. But I was like, you know, maybe there'll be other people. Maybe I'll find someone who will be willing to share the taxi with me. And so I'm standing in line waiting to get on my train. And like the very first person I meet on the Camino is a pilgrim from Barcelona hiking her second Camino. Her name is Maria. And super nervous to talk to her. Like, you know, my Spanish, I'd been taking Spanish lessons in preparation for a few months, but it was still like rusty. I hadn't used it a whole lot with anyone other than my Spanish teacher.
Yeah.
And so I'm like super nervous, but I like tap her on the shoulder and I'm like, disculpe, vas al Camino. And she was super nice, said yes. And it turns out she had run into the same problem and had wanted to start in St. John, but thought she wasn't going to be able to. And so very first person I meet is like, yeah, sure, I'll share a taxi with you, stranger.
That's cool.
And that was just kind of the experience the whole way. Like people were just so friendly and open, and the Camino just had this way of like, things just worked out.
What do you think that is, man? Like you're not going to get that just like, you know, in any time, anywhere. Like,
Well,
you think it's just like the nature of everybody's on this like adventure?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people will, you know, say it's, you know, has to do with the religious nature. You know, they'll say it's God. They'll say it's magic. They'll say, you know, for me, that doesn't really jive with my worldview. And so I think it's simpler than that. I think it's just when you get a bunch of people together to do a hard thing.
Yeah.
There's something about the nature of A, doing a hard thing together.
Yeah.
And then B, knowing that you're all here for kind of the same reasons, for similar reasons, that just opens people up and gets them. And there's enough people walking, like part of the magic of the Camino. I was really afraid before I went about like how crowded it was going to be. You know, I'd heard people sort of saying, oh, it's gotten so busy these days. Right, it's impossible. Right. But that's the magic of it. That's what made, to me, that's where the magic comes from, is it's all these people walking the same steps, these steps that have been walked for thousands of years. And they're all doing this hard thing together. And so when you see someone who needs help, you help them. When you, you know, you're always sharing things from your pack, you're offering people chocolate, you're offering people a Band-Aid, or, you know, whatever people need, there's probably someone coming not far behind you who has that thing, has that skill, has that experience, and can help out.
So great.
It's really cool.
I really wish it carried over more into like everyday life, because life is just as hard.
It is.
Come on, y'all.
You're so right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so take me. So what was one of the most gnarly parts? Like something that you might be like, let's not do that again.
So I mean, the Camino was hard, man. It was
490 miles, 500. I'm going to go and just round it up. 500 miles is like,
that's it was hard.
I don't care what you're doing. That's not easy.
Yeah, it was hard. It was great. I loved it. I really did. Like, just, I got there and, you know, I had lost my job a few months before. I got fired from a company, great company. Still think really highly of them, still have a lot of great friends there, but we just weren't a great fit. And so I got fired in July. And so I was sort of going into my Camino expecting to be thinking about that all the time, thinking about what I was going to do with my life. And for the first like 3 weeks, I didn't think about shit. I just thought about like, wow, look at that beautiful mountain. Hey,
right?
How do I talk to this stranger walking next? It was, so that was incredible. But
that's meditative in its own right.
Yeah.
Like not, that's why, you know, like I think about that. Like they always say, you know, I get my best ideas in the shower or whatever. And it's like, that's because you're not obsessing over it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like just subconscious and the universe just work it out.
Yeah. Gnarliest parts. So I think everyone except for my friend Jay, who I met, Jay was this 24-year-old kid. Had just gotten his master's in primatology. Was like an amateur kickboxer. Amateur boxer. His parents were Muay Thai black belts or something like that. Oof. But he was a boxer and chess player. Really interesting guy.
Wow.
He's the only person I met who never seemed to get tired. I think one day he complained about being tired.
Well,
but everyone else hits this wall at some point.
Yeah. Okay.
And so,
where was your wall? What mile was your wall?
So first few days I was like, oh, this is easy. I've got this. I'm feeling great. The first couple of days from St. John, you're walking straight up mountains like the Pyrenees. It's really steep. It's hard. And I was like, I feel great. I was expecting to hurt and I was like, I feel great. This is awesome. Right. I'm walking fast. I'm like, you know, ahead of most people. This is nothing. And then like, I think it was about a week in and I just hurt. My feet were killing me.
Mm.
I started to get like a shin splint one day, which scared the crap out of me because I know that those can get bad. And so I was like, I was worried that.
And you want to finish.
Yeah. I was like, my ankles started to hurt so bad that I was worried. I was like, is this normal? Do I have a stress fracture? What's going on here? And then I slowly started to form my Camino family. There was a group of about 8 of us walking together. And we walked together for 3 or 4 weeks and it was fantastic. I love them. They're really, really neat people from Poland.
That's cool.
You know, Jay was from the UK. Fimco was from the Netherlands. There were a couple of us who are American. It was a really cool group. But this group liked to walk far and fast for the most part. And so I'm like, I'm hurting. And then I get sick. I just came down with a cold or something, and I was like, I was worried. And is this COVID? Am I giving people COVID? Do I need to not be staying in albergues every night?
Yeah.
So that was like kind of the first rough patch was this, you know, about a week in, there were probably 4 days or so where I was just hurting and feeling crappy. And I was trying not to drag the group down. They were all teasing me because I'm mostly a pretty upbeat guy, but those few days I was complaining.
What's wrong, man? My feet hurt.
But so that was the first sort of hurdle. And then there was the next big hurdle. So our group walked together for 3 or 4 weeks. And then we split up into two groups, walked together as two groups for a few days, and then I really wanted to go out on my own again. I had plans to meet my sister on like a certain day. And so the group kind of wanted to walk a little bit faster than I did. I wanted to make sure I didn't get to that town. I've since heard thru-hikers say, don't ever plan to meet someone in a location on a day. Pick one of the two, right. A location or a day.
Yeah, because you got to either get there. Yeah, I can.
You got to time. It's tough to time things just right. Yeah. But so I had some extra time I needed to kill, and I, being alone has always been hard for me. I'm an extrovert. I love being around people, and so I wanted to spend some time alone again towards the end of my Camino before I was going to be with my sister, who I would finish the Camino with, and so I went out on my own again, and the first few days were really not bad. I met some new people, had some really nice walks by myself, got some time to think. You know, by now I was starting to think a little bit about what was after the coming after the Camino, and I'd moved from just like everything's new to okay, now I know my routine, so I can think again.
Yeah.
So I had some nice long walks to myself, met some cool people, but then we started to cross into Galicia, and we're getting close to the end of October, beginning of November, and Galicia in the winter is cold and wet.
Not Galicia, the best hiking weather.
No, Galicia is actually, I think the name Galicia, I shouldn't be saying the shit because I have not fact checked myself, but I think that there's some commonality between Galicia and Gaelic. And like,
okay.
Say it, and the terrain is very similar to like Scotland. And
got you.
It's like grassy, hilly, and just like rain.
Yeah, but not necessarily friendly. Yeah, I get it.
And so the day that I think was the hardest single day of my whole Camino was the steepest climb on the Camino is walking up to Osobrero, which is this small town on the top of a mountain right before you get to Galicia. Galicia is sort of separated from Spain by mountains, the rest of Spain. And so as we're walking up this mountain, it is raining. It's probably 40 degrees and the wind is ripping through.
Well, you wanted mountains to suffer. I mean,
and man, I got it. I was just chilled to the bone. I hiked those days in short shorts because I like my skin dried faster than any of the clothes I had in my pack would. And so I was like, I'm just going to tough it out and my legs are going to be cold, but at least I'll be able to dry once I get somewhere. And it was just, I had a rain jacket and an umbrella with me, a lightweight hiking umbrella. The umbrella was useless. The wind just completely useless.
Right.
And, you know, you hike even a great rain jacket, you hike in the rain long enough and
it's still wet.
Yep. It's just there is no rain jacket that has been invented that can keep out.
It's water resistant, not waterproof.
And so that was tough. And then just on the tail end of that, as the weather's starting to improve, I had probably the thing that ended up being the toughest part of my Camino, which was I got just wrecked by bed bugs.
I saw that in your post. That's like a nightmare, man.
It was brutal. I woke up, you know, there was one day early on in the Camino where I had woken up from a, you know, kind of nasty albergue with like two or three bites. And it was like, maybe they're bed bugs, maybe they're not, who knows?
Right.
And so I washed all my stuff. It was fine. You know, never didn't see any more bites come up, you know, kept walking. But this time I ended up, it took a few days for them to all show up. But by the third day after I'd started to notice them, I think I had somewhere between 60 and 90 bites. I was just destroyed.
What do you do when you're out like that? I mean, you got no resources, really. I mean, what are you doing?
It's tough. a little bit of suffer through it, a little bit of just do the best you can with what you got.
Right.
So the thing that kills them is heat. Like that's from everything I've read, that's the most reliable thing. And so I just started for the next, like for basically the rest of my trip, every time I could, I would just wash and dry all my clothes on and my pack and everything on the highest possible heat I could find.
Oh man.
And the thing that's really insidious about them is like, so first off, like they're not dangerous. They're just annoying.
Right.
But you know, they can spread and you don't want to be the guy who brings bed bugs.
Yeah. You don't want to be the bed bug guy.
Yeah. And you know, you feel gross and you feel like you don't want to tell people about it and you feel weird and
right.
You know, I hightailed it to the nearest town once I realized I had them, and I found a laundromat and I just threw everything in, and I just kept doing it until the bites stopped showing up.
Oh man.
And I will say I had this, like, I was really freaking out at the start. My sister met me like a day or two after I got the bed bugs, which I hated because she hey, welcome, what's up, I've got bed bugs, so
you have bed bugs too. Yeah.
But we were staying in this I'd rented a private room for us for a couple nights because I wanted her to have a good night's sleep when she first got there, and I had this freak out where I found a single dead bed bug in the room. And I was just like, no. Oh, no, did I bring this? Was this here? Like, and I tell the owner of the hotel, and he's like, okay, I see it. It's like a single bug. I spray this thing every, he's saying this to me in Spanish, and we're trying to communicate in like my,
it's like, I get a bunch of you guys to come through here. Chill out.
Yeah. Man. He's like, chill. It's okay. Yeah. Like I clean this stuff all the time. Like, look at the mattress. Right. There's no bed bugs. Like everything's like
dead for a reason. Yeah.
But if you want, you can have the other room. And I was like, okay, maybe let me think about it. And then I'm like so paranoid. I'm so nervous. I start searching the room, like looking in this other room, like trying to see if there's anything. And he comes in and finds me. And he's like, he says to me in Spanish, and I wish I can't remember the Spanish words, but he basically says like, look, man, like heart to heart, you got to get over this. If you like, this is going to end your Camino. Like I've walked, I've walked the Camino 5 times. Like this shit happens. Like you need to get over this or your Camino is already done. You're over. It's done.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it was kind of a slap in the face. It was like, he was blunt. He was a wake up call.
Yeah.
But it was a bit of a slap in the face, and it, you know, they didn't totally get out of my head, I think, until I got home and was able to like fully wash everything and like get back. But I think he helped me get through the last like couple of weeks where
that's incredible.
I was just walking.
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like you're saying, a couple of weeks. It's not like, oh, you know, finish your hike, you know, you'll just get in late tonight or whatever. No, you were talking about a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Now, I kept washing all my stuff every chance I could get.
Sure, sure. That's why you did it, right? You wanted those experiences.
Yeah.
I mean,
bed
bugs aside. that's great, man. Well, you I'm gonna hack off of your post here a little bit. You have I saw on LinkedIn and I saw you made a blog post. I'll link that up too. But your biggest takeaways. I want to parse some of these with you.
Yeah, let's do it.
The first one you have. The Camino is hard, but that's what makes it worth doing.
Yeah.
What are you saying with that? I mean, I would agree. Like I've never done the hike you've done, but I mean, that's hard things pay off, right?
Yeah. And you know, I talked about when I was talking about the magic of the Camino, like doing something hard with other people, really bonds you. It gives you a shared language, you know, trauma bonding, I guess, in a way.
It's support. For sure. You trained jiu-jitsu for a while, didn't you? Or I don't know if you
a
still
little
do
bit.
Or...
Yeah.
You get it. The climbing too.
Yep. Yeah. Climbing is very similar too. You know, you're putting yourself in a dangerous position.
It's like micro doing things that hurt. Trauma bonding.
What's that? Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like microdosing trauma bonding.
Yeah, it kind of is. And you know, I talked about like those first few weeks, my mind was clearer than it had been in years. And it was because, you know, there was nothing to do but walk. And I was thinking so much about where am I going to stay? How am I going to communicate? How do I talk to people?
Right. Right.
How do I make friends? Damn, my feet hurt. And so it really clears your head. And it, you know, you're left with this feeling of like, I did something. You're left with this feeling of fulfillment. And, you know, I often joked about starting a company. People would ask me like how it was going, how I liked, I ran an agency for a number of years called Crit. You know this, obviously, since you were one of the mentors who helped us get the company off the ground. but, you know, people would ask me like how I liked my job or how things were going. And I'd say for a while, I would say it's fun. And then I stopped saying that because I was like, it's not always fun. In fact, it's work usually now. Not fun.
Right.
But I finally started saying it's really fulfilling. Like,
okay,
like it's hard, but it's really fulfilling.
Right.
And the Camino was the same way. You know, it was this long, hard thing that just made you feel like, made you feel clear and lighter in a lot of ways, and made me feel like I was doing something that I could be proud of. And it simplifies things.
Yeah, man. I don't guess you're in the you said you remember a bureau for a while, Bureau Slack. I mean,
yeah,
my regular listeners know Carl and they know the bureau, but I don't guess you're in the SoCo Slack anymore either. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't. But
I was for years, but I don't think I am anymore. Yeah.
There was a conversation that started late last week and it went over the weekend, I think. And it was several posts long, and people were making long posts about this very similar subject. And it started off with like comparing the generations or something like that, you know, which is like where we always go, like Gen Z's lazy or whatever. Which I don't subscribe to that, but and somebody made the post of like, you know, and you've probably seen it where it's like hard times make hard men, you know, hard men make easy times make easy men make hard times, like, or people, like whatever. I don't know, some variation of that or whatever. And it was like, you are here. You are at the point where easy times make easy people and shit's hard, you know, because of that, or it's going to be. It's like, I don't ever want to blame generations because I think that's just mentally lazy. We're not being honest with ourselves, but I do think, because I think it goes across the board, but I think people in general don't know what it means to complete something extremely difficult. I don't, you know, that's not scientific. I don't have percentages or whatever, but I know a lot of people that I talk to, they would look at what you did, 500 miles hiking. What are you, insane? Like, what's wrong with you? Meanwhile, thousands of people have done the same pilgrimage, right? It's like, it's like a thing that's happened over generations. So it's not out of the question, but it's just like, there's a certain person, I guess, in the population that just can't fathom, you know, putting themselves out there and doing that. I think those are the people that we're all responding to. I commend you for what you did, and I don't know where I'm going with this other than like I wish more people would do things like this.
Thanks, man. I mean, I think we do need to be careful. Like, there's different versions of hard for everybody.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
absolutely.
There are parts about today's world that are harder, you know, especially for people who, you know, aren't born with as much resources or access as a lot of us are. You know, it's hard to, you know, claw your way through the world today. And it's hard to live if you're making, you know, less than $30,000 a year, which at one point in time would have been a pretty good amount of money to live off of.
Right.
And really, it's even that's more than that's hard. And so I think that there are plenty of people who have different versions of hard. And so I think it's good for us to remember that. But I will say that, like, I do think that, you know, doing hard things does make doing other hard things feel less daunting. And
yeah, I do too.
That training, that like exposing yourself, like we were joking about microdosing trauma bonding,
right.
But like microdosing hard things.
That's,
I was just listening to some podcasts, and God, again, I need to be careful about just spouting shit where I don't necessarily know the science behind it or anything. But someone was talking about how there had been this study of like brain science where people who did something they didn't want to do that like they saw as like hard and uncomfortable, and that some part of their brain like kind of lit up. And over time, you know, we're remarkably good at adjusting,
right,
to our circumstances, whatever they are. Mm-hmm. And so like over time, the things that feel hard start to feel less hard and less uncomfortable. And
right.
So then your capacity grows. It's like weightlifting.
Yeah.
It's like training at anything. Your capacity grows when you put yourself under stress. Now, you also need to take the right amount of recovery. And you
right.
need
to, it's important too.
You know, you need to find balance to things or else you just break.
Yeah, you'll burn out or break or explode or whatever. Yeah, man.
People around you who you care about, you know.
Like a 500-mile hike, I mean, for somebody, running a 5K for the first time might be that 500-mile hike.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's whatever it is, you know? But you, I mean, you see so many people, like, navigating towards, like, you know, doing a Spartan race or, you know, whatever it is. Like, I think that's why jiu-jitsu is so popular right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's like, it's this combined hard experience that if I want to get anywhere with, I have to commit to it for more than a couple of months. You know, I've got to do this thing for, I mean, what, on average, 3 years, 2 years to get a blue belt, which is the first level. Like, you got to stick with it. You have to suffer every day a little bit and build and build and build and build. And that's what we need to do.
Suffering is a unique kind of suffering. You're signing yourself up to having your face smashed into someone's armpit, sweaty armpit, and like
constantly.
Get rope burn from like the gi.
Oh man, I know. That's the worst. It was like on the side of your face after class. Yeah,
it's such a strange sport, but man, I loved it. I've thought a lot about going back to it.
So your other one here, I'm gonna combine two of them. It's easier to make friends on the Camino than to be alone, and the people are the best part.
Yeah.
I think we touched on that a little bit, but what's your, what are you driving home there?
And this might be a little bit, you know, this is who I am. I'm a touchy feely guy. I'm always in my emotions, and I love people. If I've had to do a bunch of those personality tests over the years, and I can predict what I'm going to get before I take it.
While
because I'm like,
it.
Whatever the most touchy feely, like love people option is. I guarantee you I'm going to end up there.
Huh.
So I love people. But I remember being really nervous going into the Camino about making friends. You know, I'd heard people talk about your Camino family, finding your Camino family. And I was like, what if I don't find them? I know myself well enough to know that like, I don't always handle isolation super well. And so I was like, what if it takes me a couple weeks and I'm really, you know, I'm doing this hard thing. I'm tired and I'm not talking to anybody, I'm feeling isolated. And people would sometimes look at me like I was crazy for doing the Camino. They were like, you're going alone? Like, who are you going with? Was the first question I would get.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, I think the 42 days that I was there, there were maybe, you know, 2 days where I walked more than an hour without seeing somebody and having a conversation. Just, you know,
that's
the popularity of the trail, there's people around, and so many people go alone that again, it's
part of the culture.
Nature, there's this culture of you're walking and you just strike up a conversation with the person you're walking next to.
Yeah. I mean, what the hell else are you going to do?
Yeah. And there's, you know, and some of this can get a little toxic because like there's a little bit of like you can get into like comparison and stuff, but there is but there is this like there's this Camino small talk that just happens that's like
right
who are you, where are you from, where'd you start, where are you walking to, and like you know, within a few questions you now know something about someone, you've broken the ice, and now you can start talking and chatting and so it was just like it was really incredible to me how easy it was to make friends and just how many people wanted to engage with you and wanted to like spend time talking. One of the first nights that I was there, I was staying in a small private albergue, and just everyone who came in, I was just like, hey, you want to cook a dinner together? And ended up pulling together this group of people who were all ages, all over the world. And we cooked dinner and drank too much wine. And
that's a good way to make friends.
So that was really striking to me, was just how open people were and how easy it was to connect. And then just, you know, people have asked me when I got back, you know, what was your favorite part? And at first I started to think like, which section of the hike? And then I realized the easier answer was just the people. Like,
that's cool.
The thing that I will remember the most, like I'll remember some images and stuff, but I'm going to remember conversations arguing about politics with my friend Kuba from Poland. And I'm going to remember conversations like giggling and shaving my beard so that I was rocking a matching mustache with my friend Luis. Not my best look. And you know, talking to Olga about our careers and our relationships and like how we wanted to like, you know, what we wanted to do when we got back. And
had you traveled overseas, like to another country before?
Yeah.
I think we've talked before. I think you've traveled a little bit, right?
A little bit, yeah. Luckily my parents have I've traveled a couple times with them. Went to Germany for a few days when I was a kid. And then I lived in Scotland for 4 months in college.
Right.
And so the bulk of my overseas traveling I did while I was living in Scotland.
Right. That's different enough.
Yeah. I studied abroad and mostly I traveled with people while I was there, with friends or with the girl I was dating at the time. But I did, like, the first night in Scotland had a similar experience where I stayed in a hostel by myself and made friends with a French guy. And we ended up drinking too many white Russians and hanging out with some Scottish innkeepers.
The point being is it's really, really helpful to get different perspective. But I found that the perspectives from people in completely different places.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty invaluable, like, because it's
cool.
It helps put your stuff in perspective a little bit faster, I think. When they're like, I mean, they don't have to deal with the same stuff we do back here.
And there's a palpable difference in culture. Like, culture is one of these things we talk about all the time, and it's hard to articulate what it is. And I think a lot of it comes down to like culture is kind of defined by what people value.
Yeah,
and absolutely. You see what people value by the actions they take more than anything else.
That's right. I love
that. We have a culture in the US that really, really revolves around work.
Yeah.
And it it really hit me on the trail how like it's hard to see it until you step away from it.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Yeah.
And when I got into conversations with Kuba and Olga, with these friends who didn't see it the same way.
You know,
my friend Kuba, so you know, his goals for the Camino, he never wanted to stay anywhere that cost more than 15 euros, never wanted to spend more than 2 euros on a bottle of wine, which you can do and drink incredible wine.
Spain, I'm sure. Yeah,
Spain, yeah. But the reason was Kuba, like, I would ask him about his career, and I never really got a clear answer. You know,
he's means to an end.
Yeah, he would work odd jobs, make enough money, and then travel until he couldn't. And I met multiple people like that.
And we look down on that here. In
yeah,
we're like, that person's a bum.
But this guy is living a life that like so many people would envy. He went from he went from the Camino to South America to spend 2 months cycling from Ecuador to Colombia. And you know, he chooses to like have these experiences. And you know, he walked most of the Camino. I came to the Camino with a bunch of like fairly nice new gear. You know, he came with a backpack that was falling apart and a straw hat that he found on the side of the road that like slowly became less and less of a hat. It was a running joke that it was like, barely at what point is it no longer a hat?
Right.
And like my friend Olga, the same thing. Like, you know, in a lot of ways, like I took this 2 month trip and then I came back and like I came back and started figuring out what I was going to do for work.
Yeah.
And my friend Olga is still in Asia exploring, exploring and, you know, meeting people and having experiences like we had on the Camino. And here I am and I'm excited about the work that I'm doing. I'm really excited to push forward. And it was the right decision for me, I think, in a lot of ways, in part because like it's hard to escape the culture that we're in. And, you know, I have a girlfriend and I have two cats and I have, I'm not going to spend another 6 months out tramping around the world.
Right.
There are things here that I want to be a part of and invest in.
Yeah.
But
it is funny. The culture thing, like, I have not my family, but my wife's family, she herself and, you know, her mother and stuff, they're Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
And, the first time I went over there, it was very telling that the cultural difference between like us Americans and them, just in the simple jobs that they held,
mm-hmm.
because they looked at like, I mean, one of their family members drives a mail truck.
Mm-hmm.
One's like a janitor, even the way I just said it. One's like a teacher and one was like a scientist or something. They were all equally at the table discussing things.
Mm-hmm.
All the same level. But if you do that here, the janitors at the table were like, bro, you're a janitor. Like, what do you know about so-and-so? You know? And it's like, why do we do that in our culture where we like rank people by like the job they do or the education level they have? You know, it's just, it's something that's, as I've experienced the world, it just doesn't sit right with me, you know?
Yeah. I met a couple of teachers on the Camino who, you know, and not that it should be all about pay, but who are paid better and are, you know, are really well respected in the countries where they live in. You know, it's this mm-hmm. really valuable, seen as a really valuable profession. I walked for several days with a woman from Denmark, who talked a lot about, you know, she was, a caretaker now. I don't think she had always been, but for several years she'd been a caretaker and essentially, she was a mom. She had a couple of kids and you know, she was essentially, you know, work with people who, either had special needs or,
mm-hmm.
elderly people who needed extra help. She would come in and, you know, provide physical assistance and she didn't want to retire because she liked what she did and she just wanted to help. And she talked about how she picked that career and it was all about wanting to help people and wanting to make a difference in someone's life.
And that's how it should be. The culture shouldn't look at you out of the corner of their eye because you're doing that work, you know?
Yeah.
It's just weird.
One more thing that I want to say, one more little story about just like people mattering. So my sister came and joined me for the last week of the Camino. And that was a really incredible experience. It was really fun to share with her. It was also tough. You know, we love each other. We're really close, but we bickered like hell on the Camino.
Your brother and sister.
Yeah. But towards the end of our, we got to Santiago, got the really incredible experience, felt the joy of sort of finishing.
Yeah.
And it was pouring on us when we got to Santiago. I was half convinced we were going to get struck by lightning a block away from the cathedral, and I was going to be pissed.
Yeah.
But so we get to the cathedral. We spend a couple days in Santiago. My friends who had walked ahead of me were still there, and so we got to meet up with them and hang out them for a couple days, which was really fun. And then our plan was to walk to the coast, which was another 70 miles, something like that, 60 miles. Maybe not quite that much. It was, we were going to do it over 4 or 5 days. Maybe it was only like 50 miles, 80 kilometers.
I don't know. Sounds like a long way.
Yeah. And it was raining. It was, you know, the weather had been rainy for the last week. You know, we were still in Galicia. So it was kind of muddy, but we were like, all right, we're going to try it. Let's go for it. And my sister, my sister's a champ. Her feet were killing her the entire time. Like, it took a week for mine to start hurting. Hers started hurting like day two. And she gets blisters easily. So like, she was in a lot of pain. Hiked the 120 kilometers that she did with me like a champ, never complained. But you know, we were worried a couple times for her, like, can you make it
right?
Are we doing the right thing by pushing through this?
Yeah. Should you chill? Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but she did, she pushed through, we made it Santiago, and then we had a couple rest days. So she was feeling good. So we were like, all right, we're going to go again. And then we got a day in, and we just decided to quit. And at first, I really struggled with that decision. Both, you know, I had it in my head that I was going to walk to the coast, and I wanted to be able to say I had walked across a country, ignoring the fact that people will still say that I did that. Yeah. Like, no one cares that no one cares about the details. So I was really struggling. And so at one point I was even like thinking like, if she and Maddie, my girlfriend, who Maddie was going to walk with us to the coast as well, if they want to stop, maybe I'll meet them at the coast or something like that. And a couple things happened. One, I realized how stupid that was. Like, how stupid it was that I was so determined to like check off this dumb little box rather than spending time with my girlfriend and my sister in a foreign country, which was like kind of the whole point of them being there.
Right.
And the other thing that happened is I realized, like, we ultimately decided to quit. We decided to quit before we got to the coast. And I told myself I was doing it for my sister. I told myself it was because her feet were hurting her and I was doing the right thing. I was, you know, kind of like being noble or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And we ended up getting in a little bit of a fight about that because it really made her feel uncomfortable because she was like, I didn't ask you to quit. I didn't want you to quit. And what I realized was I was protecting my ego, saying like, oh, I, you know, I'm quitting for you. I'm not quitting.
Isn't that
great? I would keep going on. But the truth is, I was ready to quit. I had done enough.
Done it.
I'd been wrecked by bed bugs. I had a stomach ache at this point. I got a stomach bug right at the end, which is super fun. I was quitting for me, not for her.
Right.
And so when I talk about like the people being the most important part, that's part of it too, was that experience of like both putting my ego a little bit above my sister for a minute there. And like, I was trying to protect that more than I was, you know, trying to think about her feelings and how she was going to feel about the way I was talking about this. And then to like, you know, for a little while, I did want to push on without her.
Sure.
And that was so stupid. And so, when I say the people were the most important part, I mean, the new people I met and the relationships that I had, you know, with my sister and my girlfriend who came and joined me. And like, it was just a reminder that those things matter so much more than ego or box checking or.
I love that you talked about ego, man. That is, it takes a lot of self introspection and self-awareness to be able to see that in the first place. Like, that's strong. I mean, most people don't ever would do that and would never even register with them at any point. They would just argue on and keep going or whatever.
Well, luckily I've got a sister who's willing to call me on my shit.
Oh,
so.
Hey, we all need that though. We all need that friend, you know?
Like yeah.
You know, you could probably say it in a way that is not quite as direct as a sister might say it, but you know, we all need that friend. I can only imagine. Like, you big dumbass. But the ego is a funny thing, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
I had a conversation with someone in class. I teach martial arts. I've been doing that for a while. And I had to, I wasn't being mean to them. Like, I guess I was calling them down. But I was just like, hey, man, like you. So thinking about compliments, mm-hmm. right? So it's such a noble, like it can be such a noble thing. Or you can lift others up by giving them a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good thing. But you can also compliment someone, do that at the same time, and then also sort of backhandedly give your ego a boost. And I'll give an example. Hey, man, that was a great technique. You know, most beginners can't do it that good.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have to put that part in there?
Yeah.
You know, did you have to say beginner? Like, can it not just be a good execution of whatever they were doing? Did you have to put yourself, because by saying that, you're not a beginner.
Yeah.
They are. And it's just like, you know, and I had to tell the person was doing that. And I was like, hey, you know, just think about the way you compliment people, you know.
My sister pointed out there a lot of that happening on the Camino that I hadn't seen until she came in with fresh eyes and saw it. You know, she started the Camino in Sarria, which is like the last major city that you can start in order to get your like official Compostela, your certificate at the end.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people start there.
Okay.
And you know, I mentioned earlier that there's this conversation that would happen on the Camino, like,
yeah.
Hey, where are you from? Where'd you start? Where are you walking to? And like at first that seems really innocuous and it serves a purpose, right? It does serve a purpose.
10 miles before you. Yeah.
There's some of that. Mm-hmm. There is some of that, you know, the Camino is not immune from ego and from, you know, people kind of boosting themselves up. Mm-hmm. And so she, you know, unfortunately she got a little bit of that as someone who started in Sarria instead of starting at the beginning or whatever.
Right.
When none of that really matters. Like it's,
yeah.
You're doing a hard thing, whether you start in Sarria, whether you start in St. John,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And so there's some of that happens and, you know, yep. it took a fresh perspective from
it's very subtle, subtle, but it's real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can build to other things if you don't kind of check yourself on some of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know? All right, man, you got the last one here. It's amazing how happy you can be with so little.
Oh, man.
I like this one. I have to agree.
This one, I mean, this is the thing that just kept hitting me over and over again. And I'll openly say, I think it's already been the hardest thing to like hang on to since being back. You know, we talk about culture.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, the culture on the Camino makes it easy to see this. And the culture here in the U.S.,
yeah.
I think it makes it really hard sometimes to see.
Well, you got back home to all your stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, I was just hit. I started the Camino staying mostly in smaller private albergues. You know, I was going into this really with probably more savings than a lot of the people who do. And so I could afford it. And I'd heard these horror stories about, you know, the so in most towns, there will be at least one, usually only one, maybe two public municipal albergues. They're run by the state or the town. They're often big. They have, you know, kind of bare bones amenities. And they're really cheap. And then there will be a bunch of private albergues that are often smaller. Sometimes they have private rooms. Sometimes they have small dormitories where there's only four bunks instead of 20 bunks in a room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might have nice kitchens and different things available.
Not bed bugs. Yeah.
Well, you say that. I think I got the bed bugs in a private albergue.
I've stayed in hotels too that I've paid plenty of money for. And you're like, this place has bed bugs.
Yep. But so I was staying in private albergues the first few nights. And then when I met Jay, that first friend who ended up becoming, you know, a core part of my Camino family, yeah. Jay was a student, recent graduate, you know. And so Jay and one of the friends he was walking with were only staying in municipals.
Yeah.
And so I was like, cool, I need to experience this. I'll stay with you guys tonight.
Yeah.
It just like very quickly, like I got there and I'd had a great experience in the private albergues too, but I'd also like, I'd run into a couple of folks who were a little more conservative than me. Mm. You know, they would sort of say things every now and then that I'd be like, we might have different worldviews. We might be walking this for slightly different reasons.
For sure. Yeah.
And then I get to these municipal albergues and I was just like, oh, these are my people. Mm-hmm. And
that's cool.
The community was just so like, people talk to each other a lot more, I found, in the municipals than in the mm-hmm. private albergues. Like private albergues, people were kind of either with a group or by themselves. Oh, and like, yeah. It took some effort to get people talking. And the municipals, everyone was cooking dinner in small groups here and there. People, mm-hmm. And because there was usually only one municipal per town, you'd see the same people every night. So you'd end up making friends and forming relationships. And so my friends and I stayed in municipals pretty much the entire way.
Yeah.
And even though the beds, maybe the mattresses weren't as comfortable or like the showers were a little dirtier.
Yeah.
I just was so happy. And I felt so light and felt so clear. Cool. And I realized I was like, I took two pairs of shorts, two shirts, and one pair of pants. And a blanket and like a couple of little things. And I was staying in these municipal albergues that cost 12 euros a night. I was eating, you know, meals that were really simple, meat and potatoes, and, you know, cost, you know, maybe another 5 or 10. I was spending 30 or 40 euros a day, a lot of days. And I was just totally happy. And
that's cool.
I felt really good. Mm. And I was just like, shit, like it is cheap to be happy.
Yeah, you're like, should I spend that on dinner alone?
Yeah.
You know, like, whoa. Yeah.
It can be really cheap to be happy if you can pare things back to like.
Yep.
And I don't think we need to live like pilgrims all the time, right? Like I have enjoyed being home and having my cozy office that I'm talking to you from. And
I like YouTube.
Yeah. I like nice things. I like I love a really well cooked dinner.
Right. For sure.
I love good food. I love I make cocktails in my spare time. Yeah, I love learning about how to make good cocktails and stuff. So
yeah.
But so you don't, I don't think you have to give that stuff all up all the time, but I think doing something like a Camino every so often to like just sort of that forced lifestyle reset of like, oh, right, I don't need all of those things. I may want them, I may enjoy them, but I don't need them.
There you go, man. You've gone down the rabbit hole.
It's powerful.
Yeah. What's next for you?
Or
you don't know yet.
Yeah, no. So like I said, immediately got back and in some ways got back to like got back to work.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to structure work in a way that is, you know, I can carry some of these lessons into work. So I'm working on starting a new startup with a friend. But we're really, really gonna try to bootstrap it if we can and try to focus on my dream has always been to build a lifestyle business where like, you know, honestly, if I can work as little as possible and make enough to sustain myself and to live a good life and then supply that for like two or three employees and just like create a great culture, a great place where people are trusted and, you know, there's not this false sense of urgency all the time where you have to rush. And, you know, so building a company, it's going to be hard. It's going to take some grinding. It's going to mean trading in some stress and like,
yep,
giving up on some adventures a little bit. But
you've done it before.
Done it before, and hoping to do it again in a way that's even more sustainable than the last time, yeah, and can create a really, you know, create more opportunities for more Caminos.
Right.
And then my trade-off for myself was when I decided, okay, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna go after this. My trade-off was, all right, I've got to do at least 1 week long backpacking trip this year, and cool, I've got to go spend at least a week in Mexico.
Okay.
So I'm gonna try to do those two things. I've got the first one planned. I'm gonna do a 77-mile hike in South Carolina with my dad.
Okay. Cool.
So we're gonna go through the Foothills Trail up up north of Greenville. Yeah. It's beautiful. We've done sections, yeah, but have always wanted to through hike it. And so it's 77 miles. So we're going to do it in probably about a week.
That's legit.
People do it faster, but we're going to take our time and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had the privilege of, I did a outdoor martial arts thing. We did 7 days out in the woods.
Sick.
And that was
where were you?
Oh, we were actually in South Carolina. We were in the middle of the kind of near Camden area. Okay. So it's like kind of sand hilly, kind of foothilly.
Yeah,
but still in the middle of the woods. And the thing that got me the most, and I don't know if you were like this when you were doing your hiking on the Camino, but was the putting away the phone.
Like, tell me about that.
Well, we didn't have one for 7 days.
Nice.
And it took me about 3 days before I stopped checking it. Even though I didn't have it. It was weird.
Yeah.
I'd be like, whoa, it's cold. How cold is it? Let me see. And it's like, why do I need to know the number? Like, what is that weird need for data or whatever? You know, and it took me 3 days to like not be reaching for it, you know?
You
just have a conversation and you're like, well, what about this thing? And well, I don't know. Let me look it up. Like, it doesn't exist if you don't have your phone. So
I think a big part of why I've always loved the outdoors is I've always felt like it's a little bit of a reset for your brain. Like,
you need it at least once a year.
Yeah. I didn't give up my phone for the Camino. So the Camino goes through such populated areas.
I'm sure you had to.
Yeah. I was still using it, still had data the whole way, and I wasn't super strict with myself. I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to check my fantasy football score.
Well, yeah,
I'm going to text my girlfriend.
Right. And,
I had some friends who tried to go, my friend Cuba, the one who never wanted to spend more than 15 euros a night and never stopped in a town.
Yeah.
Never took a rest day. You know, he was a little more hardcore. And so he did no phone, no data. He did no data pretty much the way. I think he let himself turn data on like 2 or 3 days out of the Camino.
Yeah.
And although it's funny, we ended up teasing him because he had no data, he would constantly ask us to look things up on our phones.
Yeah, right.
And it's like,
dude, you're still doing it though.
It's like, I don't know if this counts. Like you're not,
it counts.
You're just using my data.
using me as the conduit. Yeah. It's not the same thing.
But
I think we need it. We need to reset our brains and our hearts. I mean, it's just something, and that's why I wanted to talk to you. What a great thing you did, man! You should be proud, and I I'm sure it will affect you for the rest of your life. So that's incredible. Well, dude, thank you for catching me up on that. I saw your LinkedIn post and read your post and was like, I want to know more.
Dude, awesome. It was so good to catch up with you. I just love talking to you, and so. I appreciate you reaching out. This is was a good forcing function to catch up and just get a little deep and talk about
it. That's also why I do this.
Yeah, I know, man.
Fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, man, thank you. And we'll catch you soon.
Awesome.